While we were marching through Georgia, everybody swing your honey, swing your high and low. The Alaman left for the old left, and around the ring you go. A grand old right to left, walk on your heel and toe. Promenade that pretty gal to Georgia.
When you look at a map of Georgia railroads around 1850, you can see lines going through Atlanta, Macon, Milledgeville, Rome. It doesn't look like any large population center was very far from a railroad line until you get to the northeast. It's empty. In 1855, a bill was passed in the Georgia legislature to create a direct line from Atlanta to Richmond, Virginia, and from Atlanta to Anderson, South Carolina. This would be an airline. That's what they called a direct route. It would be financed by the sale of stock in the Georgia Airline Railroad Company. The board decided that it would begin laying track as soon as $750,000 had been raised. A straight line from Atlanta to Anderson would involve crossing a lot of rivers and gorges and somehow passing through a mountain range. With the idea in mind that the route should be as direct as possible, the surveyors set out. The company was formed with Jonathan Norcross as president, and excitement began to build. A Clarksville newspaper told its readers, "It will be an unbroken line of railway from Maine to California. The almost fabulous wealth of China, Japan, the Indies, and the rich products of the islands of the Pacific and South Seas will roll along it in a great golden stream, stimulating and exciting the industry, intelligence, and capital of our people." This is Moving Through Georgia, and today's episode was kind of a surprise for me. I started looking into the history of the airline, and it turned out to be more interesting than I had expected. So today, the Georgia Airline and the Railway Evangelist. Meetings were held throughout the Northeast to bring investors to the table. They were told that things looked good from the survey and that laying the track wouldn't be a serious challenge. Profits were on the horizon. Companies were approached to begin grading the route, and they would be paid in airline stock. Now keep in mind that not all the money that had been raised. A lot of it was promises or commitments to buy stock, and often those promises came with strings attached. People in one town might pledge to buy stock if the railroad passed through their station. Others might pledge that they would buy if their particular industries were served. Some had made promises to buy stock but wouldn't actually pay until a certain amount of actual cash had been raised. The legislature tried a few bills to assist the company, but they were voted down. Jonathan Norcross, president of the company, had begun his business career as a sawmill operator, making railroad ties for the Georgia Railroad, but this business didn't bring Norcross the greatest reputation. The railroad and sawmill workers would use cast-off lumber from the mill to create shanties, and this would develop into a shanty town known as Slab Town. This was located roughly where Grady Memorial Hospital is located today. There were saloons, brothels, gambling halls, basically everything you'd expect from a railroad worker town at the time. The area was known for vice and wickedness, and several newspaper editorials would remind people that its very existence threatened the good moral development of the people of Atlanta. Norcross and a few others had also tried to start a bank in Atlanta a few years previously, which had failed. So now he was in Northeast Georgia trying to sell stock in a new railroad. People began to worry that bringing a new railroad to the area would, of course, bring more railroad workers, and therefore more vice, drinking, and prostitution. Feeling that his reputation might be a drag on the airline's fundraising efforts, he eventually resigned. The search for a new president was interrupted by the Civil War, but after the shooting stopped, the project continued to move forward. One change was the idea to run from Atlanta to Charlotte and so connect with the major railroad lines. In 1868, the company was ready to start building. The new route would make travel between Atlanta and Charlotte much quicker. One newspaper says, And I guess this is because the railroad would lay new track that would enable connections with other railroads, that it would cut the trip from New York to New Orleans by a full 24 hours. By 1870, the first 20 miles of track ran through Gwinnett County. The track ended near a log cabin and a whiskey shop. The man in charge of engineering for the railroad had bought a plot of land where the track was supposed to end, and he built a hotel there. The spot was chartered as a town and given the name Norcross. The railroad also brought about chartering new towns called Duluth and Buford as it brought more trade to the area. Buford was the president of the railroad at the time. The first train took the line to Gainesville in 1871. Some of the residents came out and saw a locomotive for the first time. One small town known as Dry Pond had some residents who were eagerly anticipating the new railroad passing through. They bought 1,700 acres of land in 1873 and sold them off in lots. The investors' names are now streets in the city of Toccoa: Sage, Doyle, and Alexander. Construction had also begun on the northern end of the line, and in 1873, trains were running regularly from Charlotte to Greenville, South Carolina. The two parts were connected in 1873, with president of the company, Algernon Buford, driving the last spike. In the 1890s, J.P. Morgan bought up and consolidated many of the railroads in the South, including the airline. This formed the Southern Railway, which would later merge with the Norfolk and Western to form the Norfolk Southern. A railroad was always a dangerous place to work. Men could be crushed between cars. The live steam under incredible pressure in a locomotive could spell disaster if any part of the system failed. And constant travel over spindly wooden trestles could mean a white-knuckle trip. Possibly the most recognized character on the rails in the 1900s was a man who really wasn't afraid of any of that. His name was David Fant. Fant was known as the railway evangelist. His revival meetings would bring out the railroad men and their families. His children were preparing to become missionaries to China. He often worked with the students at Toccoa Falls Bible College. When he was coming to town, it made the front page. One of his prayers was actually printed in the paper. We are reminded that life itself is a train, and the road to heaven a railroad. God's truth, the rails. God's love, the signal light. O Lord, we recognize thee as the general manager of our road, the superintendent of our train, and our chief dispatcher. Thou didst survey the right of way, and thy son purchased it with his blood. Thou didst lay the track and ballast the road. Thou hast furnished the rolling stock, and art the owner and controller of it all. We look to thee for all our orders, and thou must sign the checks for our daily bread. I love it. And it reminds me of that scene in Moby Dick when they go to the church service. There's the big prow of a boat at the front of the church, and the pastor climbs up a ladder into the prow and gives a sermon that would be immediately relatable to all the sailors and whalers in the audience. Fant had run to the scene of an accident when his friend's engine had wrecked. He sat and prayed with the man as he died from the scalding steam escaping from the locomotive. In 1910, he was at the controls, headed for Atlanta with his African-American fireman, Rufus Johnson. He passed through the city limits of Toccoa, then opened the throttle to 50 miles an hour. That's when everything went wrong. For some reason, the locomotive jumped off the rails and fell 70 feet. Fant was unhurt and crawled out of the wreck to find the fireman. Johnson was shaken up, but also not seriously hurt. The two sat down to recover their senses just as the flagman arrived on the scene from the other direction. Since the flagman didn't see any bodies, it was assumed that the two had died, and Fan's son learned in the next day's paper that his father had died in a train wreck. But oddly enough, Fan's wife and his young daughter were in another train not far behind his when the wreck occurred. That train stopped, and several passengers walked up to see the wreck. David and his wife saw each other, and she knew that he was all right. I imagine it was quite a surprise for their boy when he got home. Fant would continue to ride the rails until 1939, 71 years old with 47 years of service. He would die in 1965 at the age of 97. This is Moving Through Georgia, a Georgia history podcast that focuses on Northeast Georgia but wanders around a little bit. As I say, this episode was something of a surprise. I didn't think this would be interesting enough to make an episode out of, but it turned out to be pretty cool. This will actually be the last episode of this series. Things are starting to get busy at school, and I need to kind of focus on that. I actually have a long list of episodes I want to do over this summer, so we will start episodes again the first week in June. Please stay subscribed. We have some good stories coming up. We have some murders, we have a train wreck, we have insane people running around Rabun County, the Peachtree Bandit, and we'll even detour a little bit up to Alaska. I'm also preparing for a live show. This is going to be in downtown Clarksville at Sweet Southern Creations. It's on Washington Avenue right across from the theater. Starting at 3 o'clock, I'm going to give about an hour of stories about true crime here in Habersham. If you've ever done a ghost tour with me, these are very different stories. I'm going to lean more towards true crime, although I might throw in one ghost story. All right, it's a great coffee shop, Sweet Southern Creations on Washington Avenue, April 13th at 3 o'clock. Hope to see you there. In 1911, Fan's train would be held up by one of the more famous train robbers, Bill Miner. We've actually done two episodes about old Bill in the past. The newspapermen who reported the story praised Mrs. Fan for not going into hysterics or fainting when she heard the news about the robbery. Her husband, after all, had survived falling 70 feet in a steam locomotive without a scratch. Around the ring you go, a grand old right to left walk on your heel and toe, promenade that pretty gal to Georgia. That's all.